We present the News Quiz with your host, Fred McCauley.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a fire safety notice spotted in a hotel in Finland and read by Alan Smith.
In the event of a fire, if you're unable to leave your room, please call reception. Seal the gaps around the door and expose yourself in the window.
Thanks to Babs and Neil for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. We welcome first on my right, Andy Hamilton and former Director of Communications at Number 10, Katy Perrier. And opposite them on my left, comedian London Hughes and Andrew Maxwell. Andy, who's arguing over the checkers at dinner?
Well, this is the latest instalment in what I've now come to regard as Schrödinger's Brexit. Because in theory, this Brexit is simultaneously both alive and dead inside a box, and both realities exist until someone opens the box in about 30 years' time, the way things are going. So this was the week we've had, and this week saw Theresa May kind of step up to the plate. She went on Panorama to put her case. She was filmed relaxing at home, watching The Chase, which is an odd choice, I think, for relaxation for someone like her. You know, a show where someone is relentlessly pursued as they try to answer questions while desperately racing against time, but I'd have thought she was more a pointless person.
Beautiful.
You've got to admire how game she is, really. I mean, she went out to Salzburg. She tried to sell a deal that the EU can't accept and Parliament won't accept. But, hey, that's OK. She just kept at it, didn't she? She's looking increasingly like the knight on the bridge in Monty Python and the Holy Grail, isn't she? And as more and more limbs get hacked off, she just hops around saying, "That's fine, it's just a flesh wound." The trouble is, of course, no deal looks increasingly likely because they've all painted themselves into corners. And what happens when we paint ourselves into corners is we do something stupid. That's human nature. That happens all the time. That's called history. And that could be where we're headed. And I've been writing jokes about politics now for 42 years, and I can't remember a period like the last 2 years where the politics has moved so far away from reality and towards madness. And the people I feel sorry for are any doctors who are trying to diagnose dementia. No, seriously, because their starting point is always, you know, "So, Mrs. Jackson, do you know who the Prime Minister is?" And if the patient says, "Oh, yes, well, the country's just voted for a giant squirrel called Trevor," now the doctor probably thinks, "I better just go and check that."
Do you know the story about when the train from London to Glasgow broke down, and Secretary of State was Ian Lang at the time, and it broke down outside Carstairs, the state mental hospital, where there had been a breakout, and some of them got on the train, and people came through the train saying, "And who are you?" And he went, "I'm the Secretary of State for Scotland." They said, "Right, there's no..." Now, the meeting was held in Salzburg. Katy, you've worked closely with Theresa May in the past. Did you go on any foreign trips with her?
Yeah, I love the foreign trips because it's the only time you really got to see various places around the world, and you got 5 minutes with the Prime Minister without the gatekeepers around her holding you back, because actually Theresa May does come alive a little bit on the foreign trips, as you saw with the African dancing.
Oh. You know? No, she weren't alive. That wasn't alive. That died a long time ago.
It's like, "Don't worry about my politics. Look at my robot."
Is there anybody, you know her, is there anybody in there?
Has she got banter? her? What's she like?
Do you know what she does?
Yeah. Don't lie to me.
No one believes it. No one believes it, but she does. I once went on a trip and I was really, really bored because we were getting a briefing from this ambassador. It went on and on and on. It was late at night. And I text a colleague something kind of a bit rude just to liven things up a bit. And my colleague snorted when she read the text. And as this ambassador was kind of, you know, please leave the room, thank you very much, it's wonderful, great briefing, the Prime Minister turned around to me and said to me, you know, what did you text? And I said, nothing. And my colleague just lifted the text message up and said, Katie said, I bet he's an animal in bed. Which I just thought, you know, well, you know, he makes the time go. And the next day she invited him to breakfast. She put him next to me, and every time I turned around to pass the milk or the tea, Theresa May would go,
Did Theresa, when she was Home Secretary, did she have a bodyguard? Were they close? For the record, the interviewee is shaking her head. There is a significant stumbling block, Andy, and I'm tempted to go for a cup of tea as you answer this, but is there a solution to the Irish border?
Number one, it's not the Irish border, it's the British border in Ireland.
Okay.
The Irish border is the beach. We're getting a little bit tired in Ireland of it all being passed on to us. We, along with everybody else in the EU, did our homework 2 years ago. You're still on the bus on the way to school.
This is the news that Theresa May was.
It's the news quiz and also Sinn Féin's new comedy show. Live on Radio 4, it's the 32 County Chuckle Club. If you want to know, I'm smiling underneath this bit of knitwear.
This is the news that Theresa May was in Salzburg this week for the Brexit summit. Earlier in the week, EU negotiators had suggested that they may be ready to improve their proposals. Judging on what they've proposed so far, I can only imagine that's going from two fingers up to just the one. There were suggestions that Mrs. May was about to concede ground on her proposals for the Irish border, a move likely to infuriate the DUP, but to be fair, it doesn't take much to do that. You can do the job just as well with lesbianism and the concept of dinosaurs. Also this week, Theresa May gave an interview to Panorama in which she said it was her deal or no deal. The Panorama programme was broadcast to mark the six-month countdown to the UK leaving the EU. Can you believe it's almost there? Doesn't time fly when you're stockpiling food and medicine? 2 points to Andy.
All right.
Katie, who's got the skills to pay the bills?
I think you're talking about migrants. The Migration Advisory Committee, someone well like that, they came forward with this report and everybody in Westminster is kind of talking about it. They are either saying it's really good or it's really bad. No one really knows, but it's about who's going to stay here after Brexit. It's about who we want to employ, who yep. wants to do the rubbish jobs, who wants to do the really good jobs. And I did pick up that they are looking at making sure that certain jobs can come and work here in the UK.
Like?
And one of them's cyber experts. So the Russians know we are short of cyber security experts. And we should probably say that those with a special interest in cathedrals need not apply.
That was such a weird lie.
That was hilarious.
You're cornered. You basically, those two dudes were shoved out on front of the TV by the Kremlin, or they were going to get wed. They were going to be red in snow, right? They were going to get killed. So their answer was, the reason why we're in Salisbury is we want to see cathedrals. I mean, these two dudes, did you see them? They look like they'd sell you something out of a sports bag. Scumbags. Myself and Igor have huge love of cathedral. Literally, you could have said anything else.
It's when they said how many steps there was. Nobody don't count the steps. We don't do that. And it was like 123. How you know there's 123 steps? You didn't come there for the steps. Chatting rubbish. Lying. Do you know what I mean?
I hate liars.
Hate them.
The report said that the only exception to the block on low-skilled staff would be for seasonal agricultural workers. Anybody tempted?
I am quite sickened by this. I think it's very unfair of the EU to keep talking about cherry-picking when we're about to run out of agricultural workers. think it's... You know, we're about to run out of our cherry pickers. Do you mind keeping it down? I mean, I think we don't need them. Screw them. Send them all home. I'm sure the average English person wants to get up before dawn to wrestle broccoli out of the ground. in Suffolk. I mean, most people don't even want to go to Suffolk. You know, after a good night's sleep, let alone fight broccoli. You know what I mean? That's what it is. It's all like a weird Dad's Army fantasy. That all these kids are off their nut on spice and hanging around bus shelters in small towns in England. They're going to go, do you know what? You know, I think I'm going to dig for victory. None of that's happening. They're looking at porn on their phone and sleep until midday.
I don't know. Do you have to wrestle broccoli out of the ground? I mean, that's some roots.
I assume so. We're not giving them knives.
Yeah.
Is that what we want? An army of foreigners all armed with knives in small, beautiful English towns, slitting the throats of our English broccoli. Rip it out of the root, damn you. Like a real man. It's just a fantasy, isn't it? You know, nobody wants to fight broccoli before dawn. Unless you're really poor. You know, that's why the EU has to keep expanding. Now, 10 years ago, Bulgarians were absolutely begging for a bit of broccoli wrestling. But now they're like, my children want to go to school. Oh, boo. Who's next? The Ukraine.
That broccoli famine really left its mark on you, didn't it? I do find it odd that we're discussing low-skilled migration in England the week that I'm guest-hosting the news quiz. So. This is a report from the Migration Advisory Committee released this week, which made several proposals to the government on its future immigration policy. The report recommends that the Conservative government drop the cap on high-skilled workers, with priority given to jobs on a shortage occupation list, including, amongst others, mining engineers. Oh, I see, Tories. So now we want miners, eh? All changed. The report also claimed the country should prioritise the acceptance of geophysicists, games designers and 3D animators. Come on, guys. Just say we need more virgins. As has been intimated, low-skilled workers include fruit pickers and guest hosts and topical comedy programmes. But do you know what? We do the jobs that English people can't be bothered doing. Where is Miles Jupp? He's not here. And he's not picking fruit, I can tell you. 2 points to Katie. London, why have Grayling's railings been failing?
Love the rhyme. Is it because the trains are so disrespectful? I feel like it's so unfair for all of us, and I feel like in countries like Japan... Do you know in Japan, if you say that, like, you were late for work because your train was delayed, you have to have, like, a written note from the driver of the train to say, yes, that's true. In Japan, a place where natural disasters happen every Tuesday, they can actually get trains to run on time. But us, unexpected snow in winter, it's all crazy. I think this country is just terrible. So, yeah, is it my rant about the train? Is it something to do with trains?
It is. Yeah, that's right. So this is a major review of Britain's railways, which has concluded that nobody took charge. It's likely to fuel campaigners who want to renationalise the railways. It's like everything that was popular when I was a kid is coming back. Corduroy, polo necks, an unelectable far-left Labour Party.
The report said that, you know, no one was in charge, but Chris Grayling was. It amounts to the same thing. No one. But doesn't he? I think it. I've heard. Just talk amongst yourselves. I've heard.
Dish.
He quite fancies himself as a player.
Lying.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I've always thought he was kind of a Tigger type character. He bounces into the room and he's so enthusiastic and lovely, and everybody goes, "No, Chris." And that's the end of that until next week. And, you know, that's kind of the way he does things. But he was at prison service before, wasn't he? And that didn't go too well.
Yeah, sacked all the screws who had years of experience of dealing with lags. and then brought in some privatised dudes who didn't care, who were probably scared of the lags. That increased the drugs and arms in the prison.
Could he be...
I'm sorry. Well, I'm just telling you, you know what I mean? Nowadays, you can get one of these tiny fingers. You know, they're called a finger phone, and, you know, they're very easy to organise crime in prisons now.
Okay.
So they haven't caught up, you know. All these prisons are totally... You know.
Can I just say, this is something that Radio 4 audiences need to know.
Yeah. We seem to have got away
We've
from
gone
the...
Off,
anyway,
off
the point is, with the trains, we have to talk about something else because it's so boring. Just admit
it. It's not boring.
It's boring.
A lot of people
it's...
here take trains just because we're rich and famous. They do still take them. Just because we're upper middle class, don't put down these lot. They still get on trains. Mm.
When we're in our cars, we're thinking
we're
of
thinking
you.
We're thinking of you. No, yeah. I often think about people that still get trains. Bless them. Do you know what I mean? And in rush hour as well. You do it in rush hour as well. That's so cute.
Do you know what I mean?
So cute.
I've been in this country long enough. I remember when the trains were still nationalised. It was crap then. And then they were privatised. And it's still crap. So it's time English people to start thinking British people. Maybe it's you, not the trains. Do you know what I mean? You've never been good at running trains.
Oh, no.
Go back to the barge. Go back to barges or just don't leave your villages. Watch the broccoli. It's been stolen.
This is the result of an inquiry into the summer timetable of rail chaos, which found that a lack of leadership within the government and the railway industry was to blame. The report was 183 pages, which seems long, but you can get through it on a single train journey. Part of the problem. Grayling claimed that while some commuters may think renationalisation could be the answer, it's not a simple panacea. We're not stupid, Chris. We know renationalisation isn't a delicious, creamy Italian pudding. My train, I was meant to come here by train this morning, but it was cancelled due to the extreme winds caused by Storm Ali, which meant that I had to fly in the air, where the wind lives. Actually, there's a two-story waiting for a train the other day, and an announcement said, apologies to passengers travelling in coaches J, K and L, which unfortunately do not exist. The rail network. It's not just a regular crisis, folks. It's an existential one. This train will call it York, Leeds, and that great nothingness lying coiled at the heart of being. 2 points to London.
Woohoo!
And at the end of round one, the scores are Andy and Katie have 4, but London and Andrew have 5. We start round two with an article from the Midweek Visitor in Southport about old venues where the Beatles played.
I fondly remember the Kingsway, the first venue where the Beatles appeared with new drummer Ringo Starr. I lit a candle when it burned down a few years ago.
And our thanks to David Ellis, who spotted that. Andrew, who's been behaving liberally in Brighton this week?
The Liberals.
G'day. 2 points.
Thank you. There's nothing comedy here. They've not done anything. They didn't invade the Middle East. They didn't think of Brexit was a good idea. They get around in their soft shoes and harm no one.
Vince
oh,
Cable.
The tuition fees. No. Hardly a rack, is it? Yeah. Not really Brexit, is it? Long story short, this story is about Vince Cable.
Yeah.
He was, they much trailed the fact that he was going to describe Brexiteers' affection for Brexit as being an erotic spasm.
Right? What did he say instead?
He said exotic sprism, which I've done that and it hurts. Yeah, the Lib Dems, their whole agenda was wiped out by the fact that their leader slightly cocked up his funny punchline. Yeah. Instead of saying erotic spasm, he said exotic sprism.
I mean, you could see him taking a run at it, couldn't you? You could see him getting nervous about it, and then he messed it up. But he got quite unfairly criticised, I thought, because he got criticised for saying kowtouting instead of kowtowing. Mm-hmm. But actually, kowtouting is a thing. it's touts who hang around on corners going, psst, do you want to buy a cow? So I thought it may well be what he meant. And they would never, no one would have known he'd made a mistake if they hadn't released the text of the speech in advance. We would have just thought, yeah. Oh, right, an exotic sprism. Yeah, that's, I'll go and look that up.
But the point is, he writes erotic novels. Did you know that?
No.
He does, doesn't he, Andy?
And didn't he win an award for most embarrassing sex scene or something? He won an award, I think, for...
Which in an erotic novel is kind of key.
Yeah.
That you get the sex scenes right.
Yeah. Hands up anyone who's read a Vince Cable novel in this audience.
Come on, somebody must have read One Shade of Grey. It was indeed the Liberal Democrats conference, which took place in Brighton earlier this week. Lib Dem leader and Knight of the Realm, Sir Vince Cable, made the headlines when he said exotic sprism rather than erotic spasm. You might make fun of him, but exotic sprism is actually the Scottish name for lilt. The Liberal Democrats have become so diminished they are really less of a party and more of a drinks and nibbles, or as Vince Cable would say, dicks and nipples. The Liberal Democrats' annual conference, it's a bit like the in memoriam section of the Oscars, and you watch it and go, oh yeah, I'd forgotten about them, they died. Thanks to Andrew. Andy, who's telling us to be house proud?
The government have promised to commit £2 billion to social housing, which sounds like a lot of money. It isn't, not in real terms, but it's a start. The Prime Minister said that she wanted to remove the stigma from social housing. I mean, I'm not sure I've ever heard anybody shout, "Ear bloody social housing tenant," as a term of abuse. But there probably is a stigma, and maybe one way to remove the stigma would be to stop calling it social housing. We should just call it housing, or even homes. what houses? It would maybe also be a good idea to do something about all the empty properties that are sitting idle because somebody has bought them as an investment mm-hmm. rather than for somewhere to live, which I believe the correct term for that is unsocial housing. but that's it.
A reluctant round of applause from the second and third homeowners there.
I've got this idea, right? Now, there's a million people in this country of 62, 63 million in Britain.
Uh-huh.
Do not speak to anybody for an entire week.
Yeah.
And disproportionately, those people are old ladies sitting in 3-4-bedroom houses all alone. And there's loads of young families who are living in rented accommodation, constantly burning their nest egg in rent. If we could get some sort of app where we get young families move in with old ladies, and that's it. I just, you know, why not?
Well, I don't know much about these apps, but isn't that Tinder?
No, I was thinking of calling it Tender. No.
I think, you know, and Andy mentioned the million lonely people sitting on their own in the house. Can I just say to all of you, thanks for listening. Katie, what do you think number 10 will be thinking about this message? Do you think it's come across properly?
I think that some people will feel, well, we didn't think there was a stigma around social housing, but now you've mentioned it. And who's she referring to when she's talking about the stigma? Is it her own party, her colleagues on the green benches in the House of Commons? Or, you know, is it the fact that granny can't bear the fact that their granddaughter for the first time is going to walk in and say, well, actually, you know, I'm going to be getting a social house because I can't afford my own? And then the fear of God goes through the older generation saying, no, you have to own. It's the only thing you can do. Mm. You have to own. It's a mindset that we've definitely got within the country. But I think it kind of shining a light on some of her colleagues in the House of Commons. Many of them are very wealthy and they've got lots of properties. One cabinet minister, I won't say which one, said to me once around the cabinet table, look, you know, I don't know why people don't just get off their backsides and switch energy suppliers. I mean, it's really easy. It's so easy. It's just the lazy people that don't bother doing it. I've got no time for them whatsoever. I said, you know, and he said, yeah, I did it not the other day. And he said, I've worked out I'm going to save £7,000 a year on my properties. I was like, okay, don't go around saying that. How big are the mansions that you own to save £7,000 a year on energy costs?
All right, let's start the guessing game. I'm going Jeremy Hunt.
Castles are so hard to heat. I mean, that is the other
tell
side.
Me about it.
And you've got to keep your beagles up to 22 degrees so that their muscles are nice and limber. And then, boom, you've got fox blood all over the lawn.
Isn't number 10 technically a council house? I mean, I don't know that part of London myself, but it must be a bad neighbourhood. There's always police hanging about outside, people coming and going.
It's actually not that nice inside because it just doesn't get decorated as much as you might think. And Larry is hanging around and he's like the worst mouser cat. He's just so fat and lazy.
I've met him, actually.
Have you? Do you like him? Because he didn't like me.
No, maybe, I don't know, he might like black people, I don't know. Because a lot of cats are racist and it was really crazy. No, they are. They'll just and run away. But he actually came up to me and like, rubbed his little bum against me and stuff. You're wondering how I got there, innit? You're thinking, what the hell was London? He's doing
there.
Yeah,
what are you doing in number 10?
Listen, honey, I got connections.
It is the policy announcement by Theresa May pledging that £2 billion will go towards building new homes in England in an attempt to remove the stigma of social housing, telling people to feel proud of their council houses. The move to spend more money on social housing would no doubt have Margaret Thatcher turning in her five-bed, privately-owned, mortgage-free grave. Of course, we wouldn't be in this mess if, when people got older, they prioritised downsizing rather than wasting everybody's time by coming to recordings of radio comedy shows. Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn has welcomed the investment, while Lib Dem leader Vince Cable tried to say something about erecting buildings but got all flustered and threw up on himself. 2 points to Andy. Katie. Katie, who's raving about the end of the world?
Ravens. It turns out the Tower of London is to build a raven breeding aviary because they're down to their last 7 birds. I mean, I blame Brexit. Even the birds want to migrate these days. But there's a raven crisis, apparently. King Charles II said that you need at least 6 ravens need to be kept in the tower at all times or the kingdom would fall.
Why is it? I use this as an opportunity to learn. That's why I said yes to coming on this show.
Is that what your agent said?
Yeah, my agent was like, do it, you'll learn stuff. So I'm learning. I just want to know why the ravens have to be, like, obviously, like, Henry VIII and that, history. But, do you know what I mean? But why do they have to be? Who started that thing?
Well, they're very, all the corvid family of birds have a deep folk memory for British people. In fact, everybody in Northern Europe. They're incredibly smart animals, and ravens are the smartest of them all.
You're chatting so much shit.
No. I'm telling you, it's for real.
Stop it!
I'm telling you, I met a guy who has a raven, right? Ravens are incredibly smart birds. This guy does hawk shows in castles in Ireland. He's got eagles, hawks, harriers and owls. And he said, they're all raptors. And he said, they're incredible birds in flight and whatnot, but they're properly thick, right? They're totally thick. And there was an abandoned raven nest and there was an egg in it. And he raised this raven from a chick. And by the time the raven could fly, he discovered that the raven was training the other birds to bring it food. That is why, because ravens are incredibly spookily smart animals. And that, I guess, symbolises the overwhelming power and intellect of the king.
They are really bright. I often wonder whether the...
so knowledgeable. It's like... Andy.
Well, they are fantastic, but I wonder if they're so bright that they're aware of the legend and some mornings they hide. Because, I mean... Andrew's right. They are phenomenal. We were in on holiday in Canada, and this guy had filmed. He'd sort of trained a crow. All the corvids are really bright, and he'd set up a really elaborate kind of puzzle that would have taken me months to work out how to get to this bit of food. And this crow cracked it in about 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it does make you wonder why we don't vote for crows.
I've seen that online, the crow, you know, and it has to get a stick to pull a pebble out, and then it uses the pebble to... I'm thinking mousetrap. It is the news that the Tower of London will build its own breeding aviary in a bid to avert this raven crisis. The breeding programme will be overseen by a man who calls himself the Raven Master, or professional bird pervert. 7 ravens currently live in the confines of the tower, which is a real indictment of the overcrowding in social housing. And as Katie said, King Charles II is believed to have decreed that there be 6 ravens in the royal palace at all times, although he was famously a bit of a shagger and might have just muttered something about getting 6 birds up the tower. There is a precedent for this. The Soviet Empire famously fell because the meerkats who lived in St. Petersburg basement decided they just wanted to be friends. 2 points to Katie. London, which supermarket thinks they're a jack-of-all-trades?
Oh, Tesco's.
Yes.
This is about Tesco's. So here's the thing, like, this, I'm going to bring you into London's world a little bit. So, like, you might not think this, yeah, but I'm extremely middle-class. And my family didn't used to be, like, we used to be quite broke. And I used to think that we could only afford to shop in shops with 4 letters, like Asda, Lidl and Aldi, never Sainsbury's. I literally thought that was my life. And then one day my mum was like, we're going to Tesco's. And I genuinely, because it's got 6 letters, isn't it? So I was genuinely like, oh, we're rich now! Tesco's! And I was so excited about shopping there. It was like I won, like, Chinese Chocolate Factory, got the golden ticket. Mm-hmm. And I'm walking around the aisles like, oh, these aisles are numbered. This is insane. Like, has anyone ever shopped in Lidl? It's not that type of party. They don't even, the food don't even have, like, English names. Do you know what I mean? It's all written in German. That actually made me quite cultural as a kid, because I learned German from the food in Lidl. Imagine a girl from Croydon like, Mum, where's the Apfel soft? Where is it, Mum? Like, that's how... That got me through German GCSE. So I was happy. Apfel soft means apple juice, by the way. So I was really, really happy that I shopped in Tesco's. But then shopping in Tesco's, I realised Tesco's is cheap too. So I don't actually know why, but they've decided to, like, release a cheaper version of Tesco's called Jack's for some reason. And I feel like that's what the story is about.
It is indeed.
Yes.
Andy, do you know who Jack was?
Yeah, Jack Cohen.
Yep.
Who started it.
Where do you do the weekly shop?
Eh?
Where do you do the weekly shop?
That, do you hear that laughter? That could be my wife. Where do I do the weekly shop? Well, there's a thing about this story I don't understand, which is if I was running a supermarket, I mean, I'm not very business-minded, but I don't understand that if you run a supermarket, obviously you're worried about your competitors, so you go out and undercut yourself. I'm not sure how that works. If I'm in Tesco's and someone says it's a lot cheaper in the cheaper Tesco's, surely I'm going to go to the cheaper Tesco's. Who's going to go to Tesco's? Or have I missed something?
But you feel like Tesco's will now be like what Waitrose is. Do you know what I mean? So it'd be like, oh, we're going to Tesco's, darling. Like, do you know what I mean? Instead
right.
of we're going to Tesco's. You'll say it differently, like, Tesco's. Do you know what I mean? Like scones and scones. It's like a class thing. So Tesco's will be a thing now. I see what they're doing. It's good.
I shop around. I get me booze from Lidl and I get my pate from Waitrose. I think that's the way around to do it.
I love Waitrose. I'm always in Waitrose and the security guards are always following me.
Apparently it's a Brexit rebranding, isn't it? Everything, all the labelling in the new Jack store is going to have a Union Jack on it.
Stop it.
And its slogan is 8 out of 10 items are British, which isn't quite...
Two out of 10 foreign homosexuals.
Yeah.
It's all being made in massive gay raves in Berlin. A That's what they're doing. They're dancing, making same sexy love, and then on the side, making these things. And they're then going to be in your house, just throbbing with German gay rage.
It is the news that Tesco has launched a budget supermarket called Jack's. In an attempt to imitate Aldi and Lidl, Jack's will employ middle-class people to wander the aisles, becoming visibly aroused over a punnet of blueberries for less than £2 and saying, I actually quite like the wine. Jack's is even aiming to undercut Aldi and Lidl, eventually hoping to reach the point where they're simply hurling dry oats from the back of a van at people while screaming, take it! The new chain is named after Tesco founder Jack Cohen, absolutely right, Andy, who was nicknamed Slasher Jack for its pilot high, sell it cheap philosophy, and also because he used to wee in the fruit and veg. 2 points to London. Andrew, have a listen to this.
When you're singing with a dinger, sing a ding-along song. A dinger likes to ding, ding, ding-a-ling-along. With a dinger and a singer, it's a real mom dinger. Let's sing a ding-along song. Okay, Bert, repeat after me.
Andrew, whose street is Strictly Straight?
Now, this is an ongoing cultural war about whether Bert and Ernie from Sesame Street are in fact lovers.
They are, innit?
Well, that's what some people say, but other people say they're puppets. Now, the part of the issue is a lot of gay people go, we face a lot of cultural erasure. We've never got to see ourselves. And there's a relationship, a healthy relationship between clearly two boys. Granted, one is in the shape of a banana and the other in an orange. They've lived together for many years. They're very happy in each other's company. One's a little bit more irascible than the other, but they get on very well. They sleep in the same bed.
Oh, they do.
Sometimes one of them sits on the other one's lap.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes they sing songs in the bath together.
Oh, yeah.
And all that, for some people, adds up to them being gay. Whereas other people say they're puppets. But in the whole who's gay in Sesame Street issue, the one that I feel sorry for is Big Bird. Right? Everybody's like, Bert and Ernie are gay. And there's Big Bird in the corner going, hello! I'm a giant yellow bird who's extremely camp.
Oh, it's the writer, wasn't it? The writer who wrote the Bert and Ernie sketches apparently said that he based them
on his relationship with his partner.
And he's gay.
And it doesn't matter, nobody cares. But I love the statement from the makers of Sesame Street, because they said they remain puppets. as if that was some sort of, they were going to turn into something, like puppets are a larval stage and they pupate into cushions. You know.
Yeah, but I mean, surely the whole point being is that it's all in the eye of the beholder. If you're a little gay boy or a little gay girl and you see Bert and Ernie getting on like a house on fire, and you see that as a healthy version of same-sex love, then fantastic.
Yeah.
Or if, in my case, you just see a couple of fellas who can't get enough of each other, that's also fantastic. Surely there's no need to fight over Bert and Ernie.
No.
I mean, we have enough fights going on. We've still yet to kill Vladimir Putin. Right? We haven't got a cure for Ebola quite yet. You know, let's focus on the big ones. And let Bert and Ernie, let their relationship breathe.
Yeah.
You know, if and when they want to tell us more about it, so be it.
This is the news that Sesame Street has denied that cohabiting duo Bert and Ernie are gay, following comments made by one of the show's writers. The puppets first appeared on the screens in 1969, and in 2012, Sesame Workshop CEO Gary Nell said, they are puppets, they don't exist below the waist. So there you have it. They're not gay, they're just middle-aged. This is not the first time the sexuality of television characters has been brought up. Who could forget when it was revealed that Bill, and allegedly Ben as well, were into autoerotic asphyxiation? And flobbadobbadobbadob was Bill's safe word. 2 points to Andrew. Before we reveal the final scores, anybody got a cutting to share, Mr. Hamilton?
Right, this is from Shelley O'Neill in Manchester. She saw this on the Manchester Evening News website. It's from an advert for a festival where dogs can compete in a wag his tail competition. And it says, the festival is free to attend, but dogs who wish to enter the competition will need to enter via email.
Katie.
This one's from Seamus Collum in Manchester, actually seen in The New Scientist. It says, earlier this year, the UK government pushed back the date of its proposed porn firewall after realising it couldn't get it up by April.
And Andrew.
This was sent in by Mary McGarry. It simply states, to give you the best possible browsing experience, Slimming World uses cookies.
Thank you all very much. Now, let's take a look at the final score. Andy and Katie have 8, and this week's winners are London and Andrew with 9. Before we leave you, here is something from the small ads of Hailzone Chronicle, sent in by Wendy Tibbetts.
For sale, deep fat fryer, excellent condition, no chips.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Andy Hamilton, Katie Perrier, London Hughes and Andrew Maxwell. In the chair was Fred McCauley, and the news was read by me, Alan Smith. The chair's script was written by Ed Amson, Tom Coles, Jenny LaVille and Robin Morgan, with additional material by Cameron Loxdale and Laura Major. The producer was Luke Mason, and it was a BBC Studios production.